We're starting today a new series. We kind of previewed it last week, had a little bit of it, but what we're going to do is for the next 6 weeks, we're going to look at what's called the God questions. I think I told y'all last week, there was a guy out in California, a pastor, and he simply had this question. He said, I wonder what, if I pose this question to people, if you were standing in front of God and you could ask him a question, what question would you ask him? And through that process of him doing this mail out and this kind of scientific study to this group of people just all over the place, he came up and he got all these answers back. If you were in front of God, what would you ask? And he found there were six questions that kind of rose to the top above all the other questions. And he said, these questions, he said, as I looked at him, he said, I think it's true. He said, as I go out and I tell people about Jesus, he said, really, it's one of these six questions that come back from people who aren't sure they want to have a Christian faith, are not sure about the church, aren't sure about God. So he said, I want to look at each of those six questions and say, as a church and as a person, how do we answer those? How do we answer those? So over the next 6 weeks, we're going to take each of those questions and just look biblically and talk through, how do you answer that question for yourself? And how do you answer it for other people? Because you will run into other people that have these questions. So, on that thought, our first question that he found, that if people could stand in front of God and ask any question, their first question would be this: is God real? Is God real? Are you real, God? Are you real? Now, like I said, I kind of laughed when I heard that, because if you're standing in front of God, it would be kind of silly to say, God, are you real? But I know that we as Christians, we hit that point every once in a while, don't we? If we're honest, when something hard hits in our life, somewhere down deep inside of us, that question starts bubbling up. God, why would you let something like this happen? Why would you bring this hardship into my life, into my family's life? God, why would you do that? And behind that is that thought, God, are you real? Are you really there? Can you really hear me? So we're going to talk through that this morning. We're going to talk through, is God real? And we're going to look, kind of our text for today is going to be Psalms chapter 19 and verses, in fact, the entire chapter. So Psalms chapter 19. So if you want to turn with me there, I'll go ahead and read the whole thing and then we'll talk about it. Psalms 19 verse 1 says this: the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them yet. Their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the end of the world. In the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun. It's like a bridegroom coming out of the chamber, like a champion rejoicing to run his course. It rises at one end of the heavens, makes its circuit to the other, and nothing is deprived of its warmth. The law of the Lord is perfect, refreshing the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, giving joy to the heart. The commands of the Lord are radiant, giving light to the eyes. The fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The decrees of the Lord are firm, and all of them are righteous. They're more precious than gold. They're much more pure than pure gold. They are sweeter than honey, the honey from the honeycomb. By them your servant is warned. In keeping them there is great reward. But who can discern their own errors? Forgive my hidden faults. Keep your servant also from willful sin. May they not rule over me. Then I will be blameless and innocent of great transgression. May these words of my mouth and this meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Now you might say, how do we get out of this, that God is real? Can you just hand this to someone and say, hey, read that? Well, it's a little bit more than that, but let's kind of walk through what David is saying here. If we have that question posed, is God real? Here's what David says. David says, the heavens declare the glory of God. He said, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Here's what he says. He says, listen, you can look around and God's going to proclaim himself to you. Now, how does that work? Here's point number one. Point number one, and I think we see it in Scripture just as clear as can be, that there are the existence of things. Now, I'll stop right there. The existence of things. In verse number 4, it says, yet their voice goes out to them, all the earth, their words to the end of the world. Here we go. In the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun. So to start off, David said this. He said, you want to prove there's a God? He said, just look around. He said, look up. He said, there's a sun. There's stars. There's stuff happening up there. But I could say that even for us, we could just look around here. There is stuff everywhere. Stuff happens, right? There's chairs and there's carpet. There's dirt. There's rocks. Now, does that say anything about there being a God? Well, I think it does. I think the very existence of things says there has to be a God. Now, let me kind of explain that a little bit further. I've got a hula hoop. Now I'm going to do some hula hooping. No, I'm not going to do hula hoop. Anybody want to come? No, never mind. I use this just as a simple illustration because I want us to kind of think through, why does the existence of stuff, and why does that mean that there's a God? So if we use this hula hoop and just say the hula hoop is a symbol of a window we could look through. And what if we could look through that window back in time, back before the creation of anything, back when there was nothing? Now, we kind of know that at some time this world came into existence, right? Even a scientist, even an atheistic scientist would say that they'd have an explanation for it. But if there was a time when there was nothing, and we could look into a window and we could see a time when there was absolutely no stuff. There was nothing. Now, I'm going to ask you this question. In this picture, as we look back into time and there is completely nothing, not just emptiness, because emptiness means there's a container that would be empty, right? Nothing. If we could look back in time and see that there was a time when there was nothing, and we looked at it right now, and then we move forward 100 years, in that 100 years, do you think from nothing something would form? Now, what if we met a million years later, we were able to look through our window, from nothing would something have formed? If we could go a billion years and look into our window and say, has something formed from nothing yet? Guys, it's impossible, right? I mean, we know this. Even an atheist knows this, that you can't have nothingness and then suddenly something pops into it. There's no way that works. And so there has to be this question that if there is something, it doesn't even have to be something complex. If there is just something that formed from nothing, how did that happen? Now, as an atheistic person, you've got to somehow or another go, there had to be something there already. Now, if you look at some different theories on this, here's two ways I think that things could have come about. The first way is what I believe, that for something to come out of nothing, something outside of the nothingness had to reach into the nothingness and form something. And that thing outside of the nothingness isn't within that realm. It had to be something completely outside. This is God. We say that God reached into the nothingness. God, an eternal being. Now, you know, time and space, and that's all here. So something completely different than that had to reach in. The second option, and this is what a lot of people believe, that maybe there wasn't just complete nothingness. Maybe there was something like a couple of rocks. And they had always been there. Now, this is kind of intriguing, isn't it? Eternal rocks. Can you grasp that? Because that's what it has to be. It has to be an eternal rock. A rock that had no start. A rock that had just always been there. And it had been there for billions and 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 billions of years. A rock. Now, it's beyond our comprehension, right? Because that means that rock never started. That rock was always there. That's what you have to believe. You have to believe if there is something now, at some point, there was something eternal. There was either an eternal God or there was an eternal rock. Now, either direction that you go in, that rock has God qualities, right? I mean, you have to, in fact, I was reading, I think it was in the Case for Creation, just a great little book, but some scientists, they get so mad about this thought because they can't comprehend it. That they actually said this, one scientist, and this was written up in a scientific journal, because they were trying to figure out how could something come from nothing. And finally they just said, well, there must be many dimensions, and at some time a dimensional porthole must have opened up, and something from another dimension entered into our dimension. And I'm just kind of going, and you're calling me crazy for believing in God. But for you, you have to bat, you know, if you don't want to believe, you've got to believe there's something with eternal consequences that are happening. When you look at Luke 19:40, and Jesus, as he's coming into Jerusalem, it says, some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples for yelling out that you're God. Just rebuke them." And Jesus says this, "I tell you," he replied, "if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out." And as I think about that, I always kind of picture, the stone suddenly getting a mouth and vocal cords and just yelling out. But I think there's a possibility. There's God just saying. He said, listen, yeah, my people are yelling that I'm God, but look over here. Here's a rock. Explain it. Right? That rock right now is crying out that there is an eternal something, because something doesn't come from nothing. As we discuss whether God is real or not, that's our first place. That's what David said. He said, look up there. There's things. Explain how things come from nothing. There's something eternal. As I say, point one, the existence of things point to an eternal thing. Something eternal. Now let's take it a step farther. And say the complexity of things point to something creative and orderly. Because, maybe the rock's right. Maybe there really is an eternal rock. But then we've got another issue. And this is how David said it. He said, in the heavens God pitched a tent for the sun. It's like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, like a champion rejoicing in his run. He said, look up there, see all those things. Now watch what's happening. He says, the sun, it rises at one end of the heaven and it makes its circuit to the other, depriving nothing of its warmth. He says, there's an order here. There's a creativity here. There are things happening. Explain how you can look up there and see an orderly rise of the sun and the going down of the sun. How do you explain that? Now, I brought something I really enjoy to kind of give us some thoughts on that, and that's a ice cold Dr. Pepper. How many people think this is the drink of heaven? I've got an extra one. Does anybody want it? Oh, are you a Dr. Pepper fan? Here you go. Okay, I got two. That one's for you. You remember that. God's real. Okay, remember that. Let me explain why I brought a Dr. Pepper. Here's what I want to do. As we move out to the new property, guys, I want us to embrace Dr. Pepper. Now, you might think, just looking at this, that somebody made this. But what I want to tell you is eons ago, there were two rocks out in outer space. I want you to hear this. And those two rocks, somehow in the vastness of outer space, ran into each other. And there was this big bang. And as the energy of the big bang happened on the surface of those rocks, this dark liquid suddenly formed. And a pool of liquid sat there, sweet liquid, caffeine all through it. And as the years and years passed, suddenly from the rock came up this plastic. And the plastic enveloped the liquid that was on that rock. As millions of years passed, the top of the plastic became harder and it became twistable. Oh, did you hear that sound? Yes. And it became a way to get to the liquid. Now, it didn't stop there. Later on, years and years later, a wrapper formed around the plastic. It did. This is going to be one of our foundational truths at our new church. Okay, are y'all with me with this? It just formed right around it. And then, at some point, I don't know how, paint, dye fell from the sky, and the letters D-R-P-E-P-P-E-R formed on the label. And that's how a Dr. Pepper was formed. Just let me make sure it's good. Oh, that's so good. Now, are y'all with me on it? Is everybody, are we okay to go out and tell people in Waller that we believe that Dr. Pepper just happened? I mean, if I honestly got up and said, that's what we're going to believe from now on. You know, from now on, we're going to be the Church of Dr. Pepper, and we're going to tell everybody that we don't think there's a bottling company out there. We don't think there's a group that mixes this stuff, that we think it just appears. Right? Anybody with me? I mean, that would be foolish, right? It would be foolish. The complexity of this Dr. Pepper leads us to realize that somebody came up with this. Somebody said, let's put it in a container that fits in somebody's hands. Let's fill it with just enough in there to get someone excited about what's in there, but leave them wanting some more where they're going to go buy a little bit more, right? Yeah, let's make the covering on it something bright that's going to attract people. Let's put just enough caffeine in there to give you just that buzz without making you think that you're really on some kind of drug. I don't know. Yeah, the sugar, we're going to make sure. Somebody, I mean, we all know this. The fact that lid, you know, that it's perforated around this, and once it breaks open, you know, that it twists easily, and you can twist. I mean, somebody thought this through. If I just said this happened, and nobody thought it through, we would be a laughingstock. We would go, hey, there's no way that could possibly be. Can I tell you today that you are much more complex than a Dr. Pepper? Are you hearing me? The human body is millions of times more complex than a Dr. Pepper. You have a mental thing, you have digestive stuff, you have blood flowing. Listen, you cut yourself, what happens? You heal. Isn't that amazing? If look at how a baby's formed in a womb. Just the complexity of how that happens. And then we can sit and say, no, that's just happen chance. That There's not really a God. There's not a creator that created that complexity. I mean, we get fighting mad if we said it about a bottle. But when people in our environment, in our world, at college, at science, when they say it about us, we just kind of go, well, we need to be quiet because, you know, maybe what they're saying is right. Isn't it weird how we disconnect like that? I mean, you could even look at fruit. You could even look at fruit. And I had someone one time tell me about a banana. You know, banana has a no-slip grip on the outside of it. Isn't that great? And it's colorful. So someone said, hey, the fruit of a plant should be colorful. God said that. Because it needs to attract people. Why? Because there's seeds in there. And wouldn't it be something if you could just go out and plant a Dr. Pepper, and a few months later a Dr. Pepper tree would come up? Wouldn't that be awesome? And every day you could go out and pluck some Dr. Pepper, and every year more and more Dr. Pepper. I mean, that would be, but that's how God created fruit, right? That if nobody touches it, if it gets in the right environment, suddenly a fruit tree would come up. And we sit and we look at the complexity of what God's done. You know, David says, just look at what the sun does. Look at what happens when the sun comes up, and it does it every day. And there is complexity to that. You want to tell someone that there's a God? You say, first, you know, look at the stuff. If there is stuff, there's something eternal. And then you say, look at the complexity. If there is something complex, there is somebody. That eternal thing had to be creative and orderly. And I haven't seen too many creative and orderly rocks. I just haven't. Listen to Romans 1:20. In Romans 1:20, after studying this, this verse just jumped to mind. I just said, wow. Chapter 1, verse 20 of Romans. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, and his divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. He said, here's the two things. He said, if you look at creation, you've got to say there's some kind of eternal power going on. There was the first thing. And it had to be eternal. And then the divine nature, creativity, orderliness. And Romans said, nobody has an excuse. Because you can't put that on anything else other than to say, there has to be a God. The third thing I would point out, and I think that kind of says it within here in Psalms, right after he starts making these claims of looking up into the sky, he kind of changes real quick. And in verse number 7, he said, the law of the Lord is perfect. It refreshes the soul. And then if you flip over on number 8, the precepts of the Lord are right, giving joy to the heart. Here's what I want you to hear. That if you want to question, is there a God or not? Look at the moral standards that God has hardwired in to people. Now I know there's some evil people out there. But overall, anthropologists will tell you, throughout the entire world, in every civilization, there is some kind of moral code that's hardwired into people. There is some kind of morality. Just about every society in some way or another will say that it's wrong to kill people. Now, they might kill other people. Maybe it's their people it's wrong to kill. But there's this thought of it's better to give life than to take life. It's better to help someone than to steal from someone. It's better to tell the truth rather. I mean, that's hardwired into people. And we fight it and we change it. I know, like I said, there's some horrible people out there. But when it comes right down to it, we all have this knowledge that there's something within us that kind of feels, wow, I shouldn't do that. That shouldn't be. And you look across the world and you say, wow, how is right, the difference, knowing the difference between right and wrong, how is that hardwired into people? You know, something else I found when I was looking at this, that faith is hardwired into people. Did y'all know that? I can look out at you and I can tell you, you are people of great faith. Everybody here right now. Now, I didn't say great faith in God, right? I didn't say that. I just said you're a person of great faith. How do I know that? Well, because we use faith every day. We have to use faith. If we didn't use faith every day, our life would be extremely excruciating. Here's my point. When you got up this morning, when you sat up into bed and you flung your feet out and put them down on the floor, did anybody test the floor first to make sure it was going to hold you up? None of you? Well, you sure did have a lot of faith in that floor, didn't you? Wouldn't that be weird if every morning you had to flip around and put your hand down there and kind of push on it, make sure that it was solid enough to hold you up? You know, you got in a car and you trusted that this incredible thing that probably none of us have a full understanding of how that car works was going to propel me down the road safely at 75 miles an hour. Okay, maybe I was going a little bit slower than that. Don't tell anybody. We had faith that that car was going, all the processes of that car were going to work. In fact, I had enough faith that I let my family get into that car. And I didn't pop the engine first. I didn't pop the hood. I didn't check out all the valves. I didn't go through a checklist, you know, like they do in an airplane. You ever see that? You know, check, check, check. No, I just had faith. Y'all showed up here today. How did y'all know we were going to be here? Anybody call ahead? Yeah, you just knew that on Sunday there's going to be people at the church. Because if we didn't live by faith, think about how hard our life is of every time we see a chair, we have to kind of fill that chair out before we turn around and sit in it. God hardwired faith into you. And I look at that scripture in Ephesians that through grace you are saved by faith. God said, I'm going to set this up where you're hardwired with faith. And then I'm going to send my grace there to you. And through your faith in me. You got faith in other things. I'm going to let you be able to switch that over. You see, within us, there's something that calls out from God. As he said, there's something that when it happens, it refreshes my soul. When it happens, it brings joy to my heart. Is there a God? Yes, there's a God. You could see it in the hard wire. Here's number four, real quick. Number four, Jesus Christ. If you want to know, is there a God? You've got to deal with Jesus Christ somehow. Jesus Christ was born of a virgin. Now, you might not believe that, but he was definitely born. And in his life, he said this. He says, I am God. He said that. He said he was God. Now, if you look at other leaders of religious faith, you don't see too many of them saying they're God. They'll say they're a prophet, they're a witness. But Jesus said, I am God. And to prove it, you know, he lived that perfect life. And then in his death, he was flogged with that whip of 39 lashes, where the flesh was ripped up, where his organs were exposed. He was nailed to a cross, pronounced dead by a professional executioner of the Roman government. To make sure that he was dead, a spear was pierced into the flesh around his heart. He was then taken to a tomb. He was entombed with 100 pounds of spices. He was wrapped in 3 burial garments. He was dead. A 2-ton stone was rolled in front of his grave. Soldiers were placed outside, professional soldiers. They were in charge of about a 12-foot kind of area that they said, you've got to protect that. And if they didn't protect it, then the sentence was death for them. And that sealed tomb, they actually put something over that 2-ton rock to say, do not break this seal. Do not break this seal. The disciples were discouraged, if you read about them. They weren't sure what was going to happen to Jesus. But on Easter morning, the 11 disciples, five disciples ran down to the tomb and examined the tomb. It was empty. The stone was rolled away. 2-ton stone uphill, moved. And the tomb was empty. Jesus appeared to those disciples. Out of those 12 disciples, of course, Judas died for the suicidal death. But 11 of those disciples died a martyr's death. They said, if they didn't believe that Jesus really rose from the dead, why would they have given their life for it? 500 people saw the risen Lord. Listen, here's what you've got to deal with. Either Jesus was a liar. He wasn't God. Or he was a lunatic. He was a crazy guy going around and saying he was God. Or he's really Lord. Because all these things happen. Is there a God? Well, he sent Jesus Christ to die for us. And I think the final thing that we could say to this world, when they ask the question, is there a God, is our testimony. It's our testimony. Here's what David said. He said, keep your servant also from willful sin. May they not rule over me. Then I will be blameless and innocent of great transgression. He said, God, change my life so that I can go out into this world and be a light. You know, I think part of the reason our world kind of asks that question, God, are you real, is that some of his followers aren't going out into the world and living like it. And so your challenge from this is first to know that if there are things, there's a creator, there's something eternal. That if there is creativity and order, then that creator had to have creativity and order. That hardwired in us is this truth and this desire that Jesus Christ died for us, and that we can look at our own testimonies and say that we know there's a God. And we can share that with others. Guys, next week we're going to talk about how do we know the Word of God is real. Maybe you know someone that needs to hear that. Be sure to invite someone. Right now we're going to go into a time of just a reflection. If something I said today, if something, questions that you have. Now there's some questions I can't answer. But I know this, that God can answer them for us. And maybe during this time of invitation, you might want to come down and I can just pray for you, or we can talk. Maybe as we talked about what Jesus Christ did to pay for our sins, maybe as you start thinking, there is a God, and I need to be right with that God. And maybe right now is the time that you can make that happen. We're going to enter into that time of invitation right now as Chuck plays.